Welcome to NewsHour. It's
live from the Radio Catskill studios in Liberty, New York. This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, SNAP benefits are back after an unprecedented government shutdown, but the need for food support hasn't gone away. Today, we visit a new community pantry in Livingston Manor, set up like a real grocery store, and we hear how local groups are helping families put food on the table. The latest edition of our theater podcast, Curtain Call, drops today. We'll get a preview of the episode with host Tom Candela. And a new stop on Wayne County's Art Trail is about to bloom. We've got a sneak peek from culture reporter Valerie Manzi. That's coming up after the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Windsor Johnston. Stocks on Wall Street are trading sharply lower this morning, extending Thursday's massive sell-off. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average tumbled more than 500 points in early trading.
Investors are rethinking some of their earlier excitement over the artificial intelligence boom. Both the Dow and the S&P 500 index dropped nearly 1.75% on Thursday, while the tech-heavy NASDAQ fell 2.33%. There's also less confidence that the Federal Reserve will cut interest rates again at its next meeting in December. Walmart shares opened down after the retail giant announced that CEO Doug McMillon will retire early next year after more than a decade in the job. McMillon will continue to serve as an advisor at Walmart while the head of the company's U.S. business, John Furner, takes over as CEO. Walmart set to report quarterly earnings next week. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
Now that the government shutdown is over, lawmakers are bracing for the political fallout. Hundreds of thousands of federal workers are returning to their jobs after missing paychecks, and agencies are scrambling to restart everything from safety inspections to backlogged benefit claims. One of the six Democrats who voted with House Republicans to fund the government was California Congressman Adam Gray. He says the shutdown went on far too long.
It became pretty clear during this government shutdown, the longest in U.S. history, that the president and the Republican majority were, you know, really comfortable putting the most vulnerable Americans at risk with the SNAP program and some of these other important funding programs. So it just felt immoral, frankly, to continue with it.
Gray says both parties will have to answer for the uncertainty the shutdown caused, especially for families who couldn't afford to wait for lawmakers to resolve their differences. The Department of Justice is joining a lawsuit seeking to overturn California's new congressional maps, which favor Democrats. The lawsuit came after voters approved Proposition 50 to draw new lines ahead of next year's midterm elections. Guy Maserati from member station KQED reports.
The Trump administration is teaming up with the California Republican Party to ask a federal judge to block the new congressional map from taking effect. They argue the Proposition 50 district lines were drawn to unfairly benefit Latino voters, violating the equal protection and voting rights of other Californians. Governor Gavin Newsom frames Prop 50 as an effort to counter moves by Republicans in Texas, Missouri, North Carolina, and possibly others. Democrats in Virginia have also countered, and other states are considering it. In a statement, a spokesperson for Newsom says Republicans, quote, lost at the ballot box, and soon they will also lose in court. For NPR News, I'm Guy Maserati in San Francisco.
This is NPR News in Washington. A new survey shows 1 in 8 adults in the U.S. is currently taking the drug Ozempic, Wegovy, or similar weight loss medications. NPR's Cindy Lupkin reports that's according to the nonpartisan research organization KFF.
The number of adults taking GLP-1 drugs, which include Ozempic, Wegovy, Zepbound, and Mounjaro, is going up. It went from 6% a year and a half ago to 12% now. People are taking the drugs for chronic conditions like type 2 diabetes and heart disease, as well as for weight loss. Here's Ashley Kurtzinger, a pollster at KFF.
What was really striking to us is that there wasn't one demographic group that was kind of driving the increase. It looked like there was a pretty steady increase in use across demographic groups.
Although most people taking these drugs say they have some insurance coverage for them, more than half say the drugs are difficult to afford. KFF conducted the poll between October 27th and November 2nd. Sydney Lupkin, NPR News.
Johns Hopkins University says it will no longer charge tuition for undergraduates from families earning up to $200,000 a year. The new program covers students from more than 85% of U.S. households and includes tuition and living expenses for families making up to $100,000. The move follows a $1.8 billion gift from alumnus Michael Bloomberg. Stocks continue to trade sharply lower on Wall Street at this hour. The Dow was down 542 points, the Nasdaq down 113, the S&P 500 also trading lower, down 40 points. This is NPR.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Sony Pictures Classics with Nuremberg, a new thriller starring Russell Crowe, Rami Malek, and Michael Shannon about the historic post-World War II trial of Nazi official Hermann Göring, now playing in theaters.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for joining us. Normally, we would hear from Dan Hoost, communications director from Sullivan County Government, on Friday mornings at 10, but he's off today. For the roughly 1 in 8 Americans who rely on SNAP, this month brought an unprecedented shock, an interruption in benefits caused by the longest government shutdown in U.S. history. The federal shutdown ended late Wednesday night with a bill that extends Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program benefits through the end of next September. With the shutdown now over, officials say SNAP funding should resume its normal schedule soon. However, in spite of the restoration of these benefits, those who use SNAP and those who work to address food accessibility in the region remain concerned about the program's future and the rise in food insecurity even before the shutdown. This morning, we're taking a look at two community groups working to help vulnerable families. We'll talk to A Single Bite, the nonprofit feeding and educating neighbors with real local food, in a moment. But first, a new community-led food pantry in Livingston Manor aimed at filling the pantry gap. Fall and the upcoming holiday season are typically busy for food pantries. Garbanzo beans, potatoes, even laundry detergent are just some of the items at the new Calliope and Gale Grocers, a new free community food pantry on Main Street in Livingston Manor. What makes it unique? It's designed as your regular grocery store where people can just choose what they want and throw it in their grocery cart. The new pantry, which supported about 20 families in its first day, is a mutual aid effort from Calliope on Main Foundation and Gale Roots Community Farm. Radio Catskill's Kimberly Izar went to the pantry and chatted with Gale Roots' Iris Fenn Gillingham in Livingston Manor yesterday about the future of the pantry and how people can help.
We are currently standing in the new pantry that we started in Livingston Manor, which is called Calliope and Gale Grocers, and it's a choice pantry, so folks can come in and select a certain number of their own items. So it allows for free choice, it allows for dietary needs, it allows for cultural preferences, and it also helps get food to our community.
I'm looking at two shelving units. There's a fridge here. Tell me a little bit about what's on the shelves and in the fridge.
What's on the shelves is all different items that we have purchased as the pantry, and then also donations that we've received from community members. So we accept donations on Fridays at Life Repurposed. And so it's kind of an amazing selection because we have, you know, some of the classic canned soups and things that you might see in a pantry, but we also have like organic garbanzo beans and toothpaste and dishwasher and laundry pods. And we're really trying to make sure that we're getting stuff to our community that is useful to them and meeting some of the gaps that we see. So we also are offering fresh produce. We have onions, potatoes, carrots, and then we're sourcing some vegetables and meats from local farms, and we're purchasing it because we believe in supporting our local farms as well, not just asking farmers to donate to pantries. But in that process, we're able to get food that is nutritious and abundant so that people can have good meals over these holiday months and going into winter. And this Pantry came about as an effort, in part just to due to the rising need here in Livingston Manor.
And I know that your soft launch was on Tuesday. Tell me about the decision to launch this, especially right now when there are lots of people who are still waiting on their SNAP benefits, but also, as you mentioned, the need around food insecurity in the county is just growing.
I run Gilbert's Community Farm, and part of why I started that farm was to help address food insecurity in our community and food access, because I wanted to get fresh food to people. And in the last couple seasons, I've collaborated with Maria Bivens from Calliope on Main, the organization that has been running a little free pantry on the side of the library. And when all of this happened, because we'd already been kind of working together and we'd had a lot of talk and dreams and ideas, we just sat down and were like, all right, how do we open a pantry? And we opened it within a week, which is kind of crazy. And we did it with so much help and support from the community. We had neighbors and friends and all these people showing up to help, you know, paint the chalkboard walls, move furniture, pick up the fridge that someone donated and drive it across town, and sorting food that we got as donations, and all these different efforts and people coming together to make this possible. It's kind of, it's a very emotional and heightened time, I think, in terms of food access, because we're seeing what's happening in the country and there's so much uncertainty. So we just knew we needed to do something to make sure that there was something here for our community.
How did the Tuesday soft launch go? Tell me a little bit about that.
Our soft launch on Tuesday was really amazing. We basically had a steady stream of people coming in, and we don't ask for a lot of information from folks. People just sign their name, and then they had options to sign up for like our Thanksgiving meal and things like that. It was a windy, snowy day, and all these people came out, and everyone was so incredibly grateful. And I think the consensus was that a lot of the people that were coming through were coming here because they needed support due to, you know, unforeseen expenses, due to the challenging times right now. And it's a lot of people working multiple jobs, a lot of people who have kids, a lot of people who are, you know, working really hard or are members of our community that, unfortunately, the systems are not working well for us right now. And a lot of rural areas are seeing the impact of those systems failing. And so we're just trying to offer what we can, and it's really a collaboration of many to feed many.
For folks who are listening, they can't see the red and blue shopping carts in the corner. Tell me a little bit about the decision to make it a choice pantry versus giving people food and kind of having the preemie bag.
There's a lot of programs, I think, in the area that offer options for a preemie bag or ready-made meals, and those are really incredible options for our community, but sometimes it's also important to be able to come in and choose their own items that they might have something already, and so they can choose something else, right? And then also, we live in an area which is so diverse and beautiful that there's so many different dietary needs, cultural needs, foods that people are going to be drawn to more than others. We called it a grocer's. We called it Calliope and Gale Grocers for a reason, because we want it to feel like folks are coming and shopping at their local general store, kind of what general stores used to be like, where you come in, you get your diverse array of items, and you chat with neighbors. It's very casual and easy. Making it a choice pantry was also something that we felt like it was kind of a no-brainer, I guess, in a sense of like, how do we want to run this?
Yeah, I love that you guys call it a grocer, because when I think of when you go to a grocery store, you're picking the items that you want or need. As you said, there's so many programs where you get kind of pre-made bags, but sometimes, actually a lot of times, people don't use all of the items that are actually in there.
Yeah, with the pre-made bag, there's a lot more food waste. And so we knew, because we were also offering fresh produce and other things that weren't just like rice or dry goods, we wanted to make it optional so that there was less food waste, so that that food, if someone wasn't going to eat it, could go to another family in our community. So it's kind of, I think it really helps to streamline the process of distributing food to people without there being as much waste. People have been really receptive to it because it also takes away some of the stigma a little bit. It's a different environment to come self-select your groceries than it is to wait in a pickup line and have something that's pre-made for you that maybe your family doesn't like or eat or could even be allergic to. And all of these different programs that are out there are vital to feeding our community. But I think that because we live in such a rural area, there's not as many options for choice pantries. And that's kind of a reason that we felt like we were filling a gap.
So the soft launch was this past Tuesday. Tell me about what's in the works for the future of the pantry.
We plan to keep this pantry open long term. We had to pull it together quickly, but we have a vision of having it here for as long as our community needs it, right? So we're actually going to be expanding a whole nother shelf this week, adding more items, adding some more things that folks requested on the wish list this past week. We're going to have local meat from Hilly Acres Farm. We are going to have eggs and dairy as well from local farms and the grocery store. And we have vegetables, lots of things that are easy for people to grab and go as well. So cereals, soup packets, tomato sauce, pasta. We have many different kinds of pasta. We want to make it so that we have all different items that are available to people. We're working towards trying to have some more things that are usually more expensive but necessary, like gluten-free items for people who are celiac, lower sugar items for folks who deal with diabetes or need to eat a lower sugar diet. And then also, we're so grateful for all the people who've donated via Venmo or check and donated food to make this happen, donated their time and energy. And also, we're really grateful to all the people who trust us to offer them food at this time and are coming and, you know, being a part of this whole project.
Iris, do you want to just share again how people can find you here at the grocer?
Our upcoming dates that we are open are Tuesday, 10 to 1. And Thursday 5 to 7. So that'll be November 18th, Tuesday 10 to 1, November 20th, Thursday 5 to 7, and then Tuesday, November 25th, 10 to 1 are our upcoming dates that we're open. We also have information on the Gale Roots Farm Instagram page and the Life Repurposed Instagram page. So we'll be posting hours and updates on various things. And you can go to the website page that we made, which is galerootsfarm.org/pantry. So that will have more information as we go along and also ways for the community to support the project if they're interested.
And thanks to Kimberly Izar for that report. Now we're joined by Audrey Garrow and Sam Bugna of A Single Bite. It's the nonprofit that spent the last 6 years feeding and educating Sullivan County neighbors with real local food. And that food is needed now more than ever. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Thank you both for being here. And, you know, we talk about the end of the government shutdown and SNAP benefits are back. And it sounds great, but on the ground, as you guys experience, that's still an issue. Food insecurity is still an issue. Getting those benefits back when you're behind, still an issue. Right, Audrey?
Correct. We, at A Single Bite, are feeding families with children. So that is our focus. And we, I think since September, we were feeding 625 people, families out there in the community with prepared food. Today, 1,200 people. Mm. So that's double. And some of that is ironically, thanks to the increased visibility and awareness people have about food insecurity through this SNAP crisis, more people have been reaching out to us, which is fantastic. I think the other part of it that's continues to be disturbing is that these individuals are not going to call us tomorrow and say, I have my SNAP benefits back. I don't want your healthy prepared food anymore. I don't need it anymore. My kids are still getting enough nutrition. That's just not going to happen. So what we've seen laid bare is need that we are committed to helping to help people with, to support them with. And this crisis has just really opened, I think, our eyes to the fact that there's even more need than we thought there was. And we're committed to continuing to support these families. Food costs have doubled along with the increase in requests for food. We are thankfully very grateful to the volunteers who deliver that food. And I think that makes a big difference. I mean, hearing, as your listeners just did, about pantries and about other options that people have to access food, mostly in bulk and mostly food that they can prepare, the individuals, the families that we're feeding, we find that the prepared food that we've been sending and that we learned during COVID, to be honest, that families struggle with time, working two jobs, you know, as Iris just said, families struggle with their facilities. Do they have enough energy to have a propane stove? Is their stove working? And then the other thing that is really clear to us is that there are many, many families who are living in temporary housing in this community. And Sam, we're blessed that we have someone who can literally pick up the phone and understand the stories behind these families. And, you know, just even recently we had a family who was displaced, who we found a way, you know, to stay with them and to support them.
Sam, you're on the ground. You're talking to these folks. You're delivering food to these folks. What are folks saying? What are you seeing?
Yeah, I have the opportunity to, at the very least, speak. And across the board, I do try to visit, deliver, reach out to whomever I can that's signed up. You know, so many different situations in so many different places across the county. I have a family that's been in temporary housing for quite a while. Unfortunately, or fortunately, the place has now been condemned, and they had to find places for all those folks, put them in a different temporary housing facility. But she has a stove for the first time. She told me she hasn't cooked a baked potato in years, and she was so excited to have a potato and to have real food. And that was in addition to, you know, the prepared meals that her families get. And those are potatoes. Those are extras we're able to provide. But, you know, as far as the family meals go, we're delivering from Long Eddy to Wurtsboro. I don't think there's a spot in the county that our volunteers aren't going out to. 3 days a week, reaching the people directly on the ground, hearing their stories. And like Audrey said, even if benefits are returned, you know, they've already spent, you know, their rent money on food or their medicine money on the food because, you know, kids and people need to eat every day.
So if they're spending that money because they weren't getting the supplemental nutrition assistance benefits, SNAP benefits, they're kind of behind. Yeah. Are they going to catch up?
These are families that are living at or below the poverty level, period. Mm-hmm. They do not have the extra resources to kind of shift money around. And so they're already struggling. Now they're behind. And catching up is not possible with the resources that they have available to them. So for us to be able to continue weekly to send a prepared meal, many of the ingredients donated to us, something that's been really scratch made, cooked with love, and the image of a child opening a door, maybe a parent's at work, being able to receive food in a container that they can open and eat. You know, for us, that's the food is love moment. Mm-hmm. And being able to respond to this community, to commit to people, to provide reliable food, no matter what their circumstances are, even if they change, someone may return to a job, an illness may subside. But in general, I think that accessing healthy food, scratch-made food, real food, which has been and will continue to be our focus, to get people food that they can't afford necessarily, even if they have their SNAP benefits, that they might not prioritize because of other expenses that they have, continues to be really, an honor for us to be able to do that.
And Sam, before the shutdown, as we discussed, there was this growing increase in food insecurity. What were you hearing from families
Absolutely.
Then? And then as this progressed through, you know, now this week, it's been quote unquote resolved. But still, there's that lingering fear that could this happen again? I think that the continuing resolution in Congress is only funding the government until January. This program is supposedly funded through next September, but as we've all seen, we don't really know how these things will happen. What are you hearing? What's the reaction in terms of moving forward?
Well, I think at a single bite, you know, we're just going to move forward and we're going to keep doing what we do and feeding as many children and their families as possible. I think the shutdown brought us those people that were probably, maybe they were right on the edge. Maybe they were really fighting and said, you know, we got this. We're going to hold it together. But then the shutdown, that was, you know, that was when they hit the wall. They're reaching out for resources and they have reached out to us. So like Audrey said, you know, the topography of Sullivan County isn't going to change. People are still going to live in wherever, Long Eddy, and not have access to healthy food on a regular basis for their family. So to me, yeah, the SNAP benefit thing is a big thing. But right here, boots on the ground every day, we're going to keep feeding these people. And if the need increases, we will keep trying to meet that. I think we have strong people behind us in our donors and our proponents in the community, and yeah, we're gonna keep the people fed because that's what we do.
We heard earlier about the Calliope Pantry and Gail Grocer in Livingston Manor. A few other community efforts have popped up that I'm aware of. Tustin Social is having a free Thanksgiving again this year for folks. Willow Wisp Farm is offering some free vegetables and food. I know there are probably more out there. Have you seen this increase in folks coming around to help and want to do more because of this crisis? Yeah.
The community here, as they did 6 years ago or so, 5 years ago during COVID, has responded with generosity. And I think with the right resources, you know, for people who can get to a pantry, it's amazing. Also trying to keep in mind that transportation is an issue, that time is an issue, that people don't necessarily have the facilities or the skill to prepare food that is donated to them is a concern for us. The other thing I think that there has been in this county a food security coalition for quite some time. And those individuals, those pantries run mostly by volunteers, although there are some other agencies like ours that are committed to doing that kind of work day to day. The mobile pantry that Cornell Cooperative operates, there is a good example. We're at capacity, and yet we're doing more, and we'll continue to do that. I just want to remind your listeners that because we live in a county where there is generational poverty, where transportation is an issue, where people's income opportunities are limited, that this problem is not going to go away. And that just because the news cycle changes,
right?
These families still need our support, and it's not easy to ask for help, and we respectfully provide that support every week. Thanksgiving, we'll send out a beautiful Thanksgiving meal for the traditional Christmas holiday time. We will send again a beautiful meal, and the holiday week between when kids are not in school, we'll send an extra meal for them. So at least once a week, they can sit down as a family and enjoy it. Yeah.
What are you most concerned about as we approach the holidays and winter?
We've received a lot of donated produce over the harvest time. and that is going to subside. So we will need to start to purchase fresh food so that we can cook that and get that out. Greens and that's where donations come in. At this time, we're hoarding as much as we can, literally. We need to also be able to have the resources to purchase locally, support farmers who are supporting us, and also to make sure that the best, the highest quality, the most nutritious food ends up on people's plates. So not food that's traveled from the other side of this country. Mm. That is a goal of ours, is to make sure the food is local as possible.
Sam, what do you want folks to know about the families who receive this food and their, I know they're grateful, but with the need that they have?
It's difficult to explain. I always encourage people to come volunteer even once. Maybe go out on a delivery, speak to the people on the phone. Really gives you a better understanding. I think that, you know, you just really can't understand unless you've been there. I don't think the average person, myself included, you know, can understand that the rest of us are going to bed, our bellies are full, our kids' bellies are full. And there's people out there that every day their kids' bellies are not full when they go to bed.
And I would just add to that the fear, the constant anxiety. These are individuals that really want to do the best that they can do for the people they love. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Let's remind folks where they can get involved. Yeah.
So it's asinglebite.org. You can call. We're there. 845-482-1030. Volunteer support, contributions, farmers. There are also wonderful opportunities, I think, to be an advocate for us, to be an ambassador for us. Just come learn what it is that we're trying to do and give what you can. We appreciate it now and throughout especially the winter.
I also wanted to just give a shout out to some other folks who are helping, even kids are helping you out. I saw on your Facebook page that kids from the Homestead School recently dropped by to present a check from their pumpkin project sales. Tell us about that.
Correct. So pumpkins were seeded, grown at the Homestead School, which is really an important part of their philosophy. And as is community service. And so those pumpkins came to us. We thought maybe we would send them out to families so they could decorate them. But it became clear immediately that we could process that food and make it into food, those pumpkins. So we created pumpkin soup in our kitchen, and that soup will be distributed to families across the county. So although it would have been fun to color them, I think it's more important that we fill bellies with that. Those pumpkins.
And they dropped off a check for $3,000.
They certainly did. And that's thanks to the families, the parents of those students who really not only supported the children in their pursuit, but also understood that they would be helping us to buy more local food.
That's Audrey Garrow and Sam Buckna of A Single Bite. Again, there's more ways that you can help at asinglebite.org. They're focusing on families in Sullivan County. There are needs throughout the entire region. If you want to help in another part of the area, you can check out the food pantry list on our website, wjffradio.org, with links to pantries in Sullivan, Orange, Ulster, Delaware, Pike, and Wayne counties, and also a link to the regional food bank. Thank you guys so much.
Thanks for having us.
We should note that A Single Bite was founded by Simpson Kirsten Foster of Foster Supply Hospitality, and Foster Supply Hospitality is a financial supporter of Radio Catskill. We'll take a break and we'll come back with the latest curtain call. It's our theater podcast, and Tom Candela is here with a preview. This is Radio Catskill.
I'm Donna Fellenberg, inviting you to join me and my guest, Ruth Kuchera of Mountain Home, Pennsylvania. Ruth is a pianist, choir director, a skilled builder of coffee houses, and you're listening to a piece of music she wrote. Ruth is full of surprises. Tune in Saturday at 10:30 and discover her right here on Catskill Character on Radio Catskill.
Radio Catskill depends on donations from our listeners, including donations from our listeners' music collections. People donate their music collections to us, we sell them to the next generation of music fans, and that keeps the station on air. Records, CDs, stereo equipment, and more. It comes from the community and goes back to the community, so Radio Catskill can stay on the air for the community. Donate your music collection today. Email feedback at wjffradio.org.
You're listening to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Every Friday, there's a new episode of our theater podcast, Curtain Call, produced and hosted by Tom Candela, and Tom is here to give us a preview. Tom, what's going on in Curtain Call today?
Well, good morning. I feel like I'm sitting kind of low in the chair today. Kind of hunched over here. Well, today I'm taking us all back to Rydell High School. Do you remember our Rydell High School?
I remember Rydell.
Yes.
Greece is the word.
Greece is the word, but in this case, vape is the word. We're seeing
vape.
That this is a spoof on the very well-known Grease that I think every high school in the nation has done at least once. The name of the show is Vape the Grease Parody, and it is a lot of fun. It's got music and original songs. I listened to a couple of them, and they're actually in the full podcast version. We did a little medley of the original songs. You know, very clever. So I sat down with the writer Katie Hogan, director Jet Plotnick, and the lyricist, and also added to the book, Danny Salas. These are three really, really creative, funny people who put together the show. And it has a history to it. There was way back when they first started, they had litigation against them, where the original folks of Grease tried to stop them from producing this show. Like 10 days before they were supposed to go on stage, they had a cease and desist order. But they were able to win that case and do well. So let's have a listen. It's a lot of fun, this episode. Today, we have an off-Broadway show which just opened on November 3rd in New York City, and it's called Vape, the Grease Parody. It's a hilariously unhinged reimagining of the beloved musical we all think we know, and it was created by writer and comedian Katie Hogan along with Sketchworks Comedy. Directed this parody is Jack Plotnick. He is an acclaimed actor himself, an award-winning director, performance coach, and our third guest is Danny Salas, television writer, director, and producer whose work spans numerous stage and musical comedy projects. Katie, Jack, Danny, I want to welcome you all to Curtain Call.
Thank you so much for having us.
Great to be here.
Great. All right, so I want to start, Katie, with a question for you. At what point did you come across or get the idea for creating a parody of Grease?
Yeah. So I was one of the staff writers at Sketchworks Comedy back 2016 through 2018. And then a group of us went and saw a production of the Broadway version of Grease. Mm-hmm. And they came to me afterwards and they said, we really want you to write this parody. And we think it's ripe for a modern take, and nobody's done it, and we really want to see what we can do with it and bring it to Atlanta audiences. And so I spent an entire summer working on it with my collaborators at Sketchworks Comedy. And that year we put it up, and we thought it was going to run for maybe a few weekends in this tiny little black box theater, but it got really, really great reviews in Atlanta, and people really started to enjoy it and wanted us to extend. So it ended up running a pretty long time in Atlanta, and it's snowballed from there ever since.
And Jack, were you at the very beginning of it, directing it, or is it you just directing this particular production of the show?
No, I'm only directing the off-Broadway version. But when I read this script, it just felt like such a gift. And it just felt like every wonderful movie parody. I was just laughing out loud throughout. And it comes from the humor in so many wonderful ways, whether it's making fun of the movie or it's making fun of the actors or if it's making fun of modern kids today. And it just felt like, oh my God, I've got to be involved with this. So I want to thank Sketchworks and Katie for coming up with this brilliant show.
And Danny, when did you first become involved? Because you actually added some lyrics and music, and you also added to the book. So at what point did you and Katie collaborate on this production?
Well, they brought it to New York for, I believe, a showcase. And I saw the show and thought it was hilarious and thought that it would be just terrific to develop. And so they entrusted me with sort of bringing it to the next level, if you will. And we had some notes, and they went away and did some brilliant writing.
And then my writing partner, Billy Reese, and I took a stab at working on the lyrics. And so we came up with a whole bunch of songs. And it really has just been a collaboration of joy with the Sketchworks folks.
Oh, okay. All right. Greece has always been a living, breathing piece of popular culture. It has been reinterpreted, certainly, rediscovered by each generation. How did you integrate that, Danny, into your work on this show?
Well, it was interesting because at first we thought, okay, vape is such a funny idea, because the thing about greasers back in the 50s was you could tell the bad kids because they were the ones with grease in their hair.
Yeah, and the black jackets, yes.
Exactly, in the black jackets. So, of course, the Sketchworks folks had thought, okay, well, that's the kids who are vaping now, it's probably the modern symbol of all that. Mm-hmm. So we immediately thought, okay, well, how do we get this idea across clearly? And so we decided to make, just like the movie had grease as the word, we decided that vape is the show would be a great lyric to sort of start us out, to absolutely hang our hat on that and get into what makes vaping the thing to do. And so we immediately, in our lyrics, just went for it.
Okay. Did you want to add something to that, Jack?
Oh, gosh. I mean, the thing is, it's just such a silly show. And it talks about kids nowadays in different ways all throughout. Like, it's just there to have fun and to pay homage to the film.
Yeah.
And the thing is, the movie's about teenagers. When you set it in modern day, you're going to get all sorts of fun, very smart and humorous observations on kids today. And it's constantly surprising you because it's telling the film story, but it's telling the story of these modern kids. And the core of the show is the Sandy and Danny relationship. And the two actors we found just, oh my God, they're such a gift. Scott Cilege and Lara Strong as Sandy and Danny, you just love them and all their ridiculous teenager antics. It's been a joy to work on and an honor to direct.
Dan, how did you strike the balance between parodying the show itself and actually saying something meaningful that will connect with people in modern culture, with the youth and identity, and also bringing in that nostalgia?
Well, I think one of the things you want to do always is in parody is you have to realize that the people coming to the show love the movie.
Sure.
And so we really took that to heart. It's really an homage to the film because we love every part of it. So the first thing we wanted to do is find, okay, what are some of the funny things about the movie? One is that all the teenagers are played by older actors. Dr. Channing was in her 30s when she played Rizzo. Mm-hmm. Another thing is that while they are bad kids, they seem to all go to all the school events. So there's comedy in that. There's comedy in the actors themselves and who they were. So we found all those sort of fun ways to play with it. Instead of beauty school dropout, we have internet flop out.
Yeah.
That are the drag racing cars. We have two Priuses that don't make any noise. So their drag race starts with a... instead of the rooming engine. So it was just really fun. Like, how can you put a modern spin on this that audiences will get who love the movie, but that also a younger audience can relate to, even if they haven't seen the movie?
Yeah.
So we thought, okay, well, how can we make the script even more exciting so that people who know the original won't just watch it, watch jokes in the motion of the old movie, they'll actually have a new plot to listen to and care about. And I think that's one of the things that Sketchworks has been just so terrific, and Katie, and just being open to, okay, what? How can we really push this thing to the next level, which has just been so much fun.
And Katie, it must have been incredible to be in the room with all these folks, with the actors, to come up with this. How was that process?
Yeah, I mean, we spent such a long time just trying to find everything that we love and everything that didn't make sense about the film, everything that is funny about modern day teenagers. We tried to be as layered as we could be. And when we started working with the team at Visceral, they helped us to really peel that onion. And for the last, gosh, almost 18 months, 2 years now, we've been working together to find those deep, deep layers of comedy. There are so many layers of jokes that I think appeal to audiences of all ages. Sure. So we have jokes that Gen Z loves, and then we have jokes that, like, my boomer parents love. And there's something in it for everybody, which I think is really beautiful and rare. Mm-hmm. And it's just such a great layered parody. I think that's what makes it so special, is it's not just cheap slapstick or anything like that. It's we tried to really go as deep as we possibly could. And it's all the credit to Visceral for really helping us to dig deeper and find all of the jokes that were possible. And then, of course, Jack did a great job of helping us convey that message on stage, which has been so beautiful.
So we thought, okay, how can we make the script even more exciting so that people who know the original won't just watch it, watch jokes in the motion of the old movie, they'll actually have a new plot to listen to and care about. And I think that one of the things that Getbrook has been just so terrific, and Katie, and just being open to, okay, what, how can we really push this thing to the next level, which has just been so much fun. I just wanted to add that, because of course our director is far too humble, but I must say that our cast right now is a really very talented younger group of actors who without giant Tony Award winning credits. And so he's been able to really shape those performances in a way that's been so exciting and bring out the best in that cast, which has just been so impressive.
Yeah. They are just unbelievable. And I'm just certain that they're going to have the longest, most wonderful Broadway careers, because the talent is just through the roof.
Well, how exciting is that? Jack, how did you go about casting? What was this, something specific that you were looking for in the actors?
Well, we had a tremendous amount of help from Cindy Rush, our wonderful casting person, who just found these absolute gems for us. And you knew it when the right one walked in the room, and whether it was that they captured the essence of the character that they were going to play, or that they had, in the case of some of them, a strange and incredibly magic comic flair and sense that you said, I have to have this in my show. This is a future famous comedian that we must be the people to introduce them to the world. But we knew them when they walked in the room, and we were thrilled.
And so far, the reviews of some of them have come out, the New York Post being one of them. And you've got some really great reviews already, and you just opened.
Yeah, I've been thrilled to see that the reviews, that they've been so swell, and they saw the actors and how special it was, what they're doing. And,
right.
Oh, it's just lovely.
I'm so glad that we were able to work with Danny and Jack at this time. And I think the universe, God, whatever you believe, yeah, there was a plan for Vape, and this plan has kind of worked out perfectly for us, and we're thrilled.
Right.
And ultimately, this is a love letter to Grease. We only did this because we are such fans of the Broadway version of the film in 1978. Like, we absolutely all love it. And that's why we think it's so much fun and important to be able to create parodies and satires of things that you love.
Okay, great. Katie, why don't you tell us where we can see it and when?
Sure, yeah. Theater 555 in New York City. And it's running now through January 4th.
And where can they get tickets?
You can go, I believe you can go right to vapethemusical.com, click on ticket, and it'll link you right there.
This has been wonderful. It's been really fun.
We're just so excited, and we hope as many people come to see it as possible. I think it really is great that it's playing over the holidays, because it's just such a treat and a nice hour and a half escape from reality and the stress of the holidays, that I'm just so thrilled for people to be able to see, you know, what we've put together over a very long time and worked so hard on.
Yeah. Well, Katie, Jack, and Danny, I want to thank you so much for taking the time out today and being on Curtain Call. It's been a pleasure to speak about this show, because it just sounds like a whole lot of fun.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
And you can catch the full episode of Curtain Call at our website, wjffradio.org. We'll take a quick break, and when we come back, a sneak peek at the new stop on Wayne County's Art Trail. This is Radio Chatskill.
This week on This American Life, there's a spot in Mackenzie and Isabella's house that's perfect for eavesdropping on their parents. It's a small sitting nook on the second floor, right at the top of the stairs.
So you can hear everything that's going on. They'll have the door closed and you can hear murmurs. We're kind of in the shadow, like, I know what's going on, but I don't know exact things.
What they've been overhearing for the last year and what they think of it this week.
This American Life, Saturday night at 6 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The Wayne County Creative Communities Art Trail is growing again, and this weekend, the public is invited to see its newest stop take shape. Culture reporter Valerie Manzi spoke with Connor Simon of the Wayne County Community Foundation about the significance of the project and what visitors can expect at this weekend's opening.
Good morning, and welcome to Radio Chatskill. Today, we're going to be hearing from Connor Simon, and he was here last summer, I believe, and talked to us about the Creative Communities Art Trail. And that was about the one that was in Aquanuck. There was one Newfoundland. And this one is in Hamlin, and it's this Saturday, November 15th at 10 a.m. And he's here to tell us about that particular event and the concept behind Creative Communities.
Hi, thank you very much for having me back. It's always good to be here. A little bit of information about our Creative Communities Art Trail. This was a project that was started 2 or 3 years ago with the establishment of a fairly loose coalition of local nonprofits doing some place-based work. This was in response to a grant application that was put out through Pennsylvania Council on the Arts, now Pennsylvania Creative Industries. And that was for a project that would create place-based public art for a community to share. So a bunch of really smart nonprofits got together and noodled some ideas, and we came up with the idea of creating an art trail, something that would utilize existing roadways, in this case, Route 191, which runs basically from the very tip to the very bottom of Wayne County, all the way north to south. And along that path, we located several locations that would be great for public art, places where people can come and gather, appreciate some very hyper local creative objects. And this is the third location that's been born out of that in Hamlin. So the Hamlin project, we started working on that about a year ago. That's been a collaboration between the Wayne County Community Foundation, PMVB, the Hamlin Community Library, and Known Grove SLS. And we've been convening for a little while to put together an idea that really represents Hamlin as a place. These meetings were held for about a year at Hamlin Library, involving the library itself, which very graciously offered some space for the for this place to be set up, and local artists who were able to use their wonderful imaginations to think of things that would represent Hamlin as a place, and also this specific place as the Hamlin location is special because it's really related to Hamlin's history. It pays a lot of attention to its past in farming. The sculpture park itself is a wheelchair-accessible patio with plenty of seating. The entire place will be interspersed with local plants, plants that would have been seen here 100 years ago or more, some bearing fruit, most bearing shade. And in the center of this park is a large metal sculpture made by local artists that includes implements from Hamlin's farming history, including pieces of an old hay rake and window weights from an old barn. A lot of thought was put into trying to make sure that local implements were used in this creation. Another really cool feature that this park has is a tuned xylophone. The original intention was to build an instrument out of old cowbells, but the cowbells we were able to find were not in great shape and weren't really able to be tuned, so we were able to get some tunable bells, and we created a xylophone-type structure that can be played on the site and tie the nature and the sculpture together. It's really a lovely environment.
I'm going to come see that.
Well, I hope you do.
And hear that. What else do we have to look forward to?
I can talk a little bit about our event on Saturday.
Wonderful.
This Saturday at 10 o'clock, November 15th, it should be a fairly low-key but nice and intimate opening ceremony for the park, sort of a pre-opening. Of course, the way that plants work, not everything will be in full bloom. A lot of things have been recently planted, but you'll get an idea of where the plants will be, an opportunity to see the sculptures up close and take a nice seat on the bench and maybe play that little xylophone a bit.
but there'll be a few words spoken from project leaders and people involved in the planning process. I'll be there to answer some questions and talk a little bit more in depth about the Community of Communities Art Trails project as a whole. There'll also be some refreshments from local cider and donuts and a little bit of live music just to round out the morning.
How long have you been involved with this project?
I've been with the Wayne County Community Foundation just about 5 years now, and this project has been with me for a good chunk of it. I'd say at least 2.5 years. It's special to me because I was part of that original group that worked through coming up with the concept, and it's been really cool to see the journey all the way through as sort of a fund steward. But outside of even just the management of the grant, I've been really involved in working with really wonderful people in each of the communities I've worked in. And I felt really, really connected to a lot of places in this county. I didn't really spend a lot of time. Working up in Equinunk with the group up there designing that park was so different than working down in Newfoundland. And both had this wonderful synergy. Everybody seemed really excited and worked well together. And it made me feel great to be just the tiniest little part, but still nonetheless a part of creating these wonderful things in this community. There's so many talented people all over Wayne County, and it's great to really see them have the ability to make this creativity shine in a really public way all over the place.
And I'm sure community members love it.
I've received nothing but good feedback, I'm glad to say. But I think that's largely because each project has been so involved with its community. There's been a lot of time for feedback, a lot of meetings. Iteration after iteration is very carefully thought over. There's really no one person making a decision. And that was one of the things that was most important to me when we started this project. I wanted to make sure that it wasn't me or anybody else rolling into somebody's community and saying, we have a grant and we're putting in this specific thing. That eliminates the entire spirit of what I believe that this could be, and that is an opportunity to have people get together, share their ideas, come up with something together as a group, as a community, and have something that they're really proud of, something they really care about, something that really represents them. And I'm glad to see that it's been so different in each location.
Well, I think it's wonderful that it's a collaborative process and you have folks working together and not at odds with each other.
Yeah, it's been a really good opportunity for people to work together. Now, sometimes people's opinions differ on things, and that's going to happen anywhere, but we haven't encountered a situation yet where it hasn't been something that hasn't been able to be resolved in a way that makes the result even better than it would have been one way or the other.
And do you have a future location in mind?
The future is always uncertain with these things. I'm actively applying for the next round of grants, and we hope to continue this project well into the future. That being said, I can't really talk about other ideas, but we are trying to stick to that Route 191 corridor. So along that route, we're planning for the future. But we've got great ideas floating around already, and some very active community members in different pockets have come to me with ideas. And I'm excited to see where the future of this project goes.
Well, you'll be sure to let us know so that we can share it with our listeners.
Absolutely. There will be a website coming soon, but it's not quite ready yet. At the time being, if you want to read about the event that's set up for this Saturday, you're welcome to visit waynefoundation.org. That's our community foundation's website. We have a little tab on it under the About section. But hopefully coming soon will be a brand new website that showcases the art trail specifically with photos and information about each location.
Well, congratulations on this latest project to you and to the community. And have a good time.
Well, thank you. And I have to bounce that right back. I'm just a convener. I'm a partner in all of this. I'm really so very grateful for all of the people that I've had the opportunity to work with through this project. So thank you to all of them. I really, truly appreciate the opportunity.
This has been a nice conversation.
Thank you very much.
Thanks to culture reporter Valerie Manzi for that nice conversation. That's all for this edition of Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening. Have a good weekend.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times.
thecooperageproject.org. And from listeners like you, who donate at wjffradio.org.
The Radio Catskill Music Auction is live, online. Bid on rare, collectible vinyl records like the infamous Beatles Butcher cover, a holy grail for record collectors, Profile by Duke Pearson on the Blue Note Jazz label, and music from Big Pink. The band wrote it in the Catskills. You can buy it to support Radio Catskill. Don't miss your chance to get your hands on all of our incredible items and experiences. Bid on the music auction at WJFFradio.org.
This is WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at WJFFradio.org, Radio Catskill. Breezy today, clouds and sun mixed, high 40 for the weekend. It looks like a high of 44 for both days, and a chance of rain both Saturday and Sunday as well. On Point is next.